Hello and welcome into episode 35 of the Calcio Connection podcast, connecting with you Italian football fans from all over the world. It's funny, some people were a little bit worried about us because we tend to put out three or four episodes a week, and it's been 5 days since we've made one of these, and some folks were wondering if we're all right. Yeah, we've just been a little bit busy for the last half week or so bear with us. And this is going to be a really, really busy week, as we're a few days at the time we tape this, a few days away from the return of Italian football, as you've got Coppa Italia coming up on Friday and Saturday. You have Juve Milan on Friday, Napoli Inter on Saturday, and we're going to have full previews of those games before they happen and recaps after they happen. It's going to be really weird previewing those games because we have no recent form to go by, right? It's almost going to be like previewing a new season because you're talking about 3 months off everybody's now had. That's a full offseason for these teams. So it's not going to be an easy thing to break down when we really get down to the nitty-gritty of that. But we're going to have an interesting show. Not only will we talk some current events today, but we're going to take a deep dive on a name that Serie A fans, especially Inter fans, have memory of, and that's Gabigol. A special guest of ours today is going to help us break him down. So before we introduce our guest, let me introduce my co-host, Jerry Mancini. I'm Alex Dono. Jerry is with me riding shotgun as always. And Jerry, I know you're figuring out how you can register to vote in the city of Rome, because a little birdie told me that Claudio Lotito, the Lazio president, may run for mayor of the city of Rome. How you doing, Jerry?
Fuck me, man. That's all I can say. This is all bad. I love Lotito as an owner because, not love, I respect him because he's been able to really help this club since 2004 when it went into a really big downhill. But to become president, I mean, to become, what is it, prime minister of Italy, you said?
No, I think he's going to start with mayor of Rome, and maybe he'll run for prime minister a few years down the road.
Okay, whatever the heck it is over there. I'm the worst when it comes to politics. Sorry, guys.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, man. But to become mayor of Rome? Oh, fuck. If it wins me a Scudetto, sure, why not? But as long as he doesn't turn out like Silvio Berlusconi, oh, fuck. Oh,
He might get Lazio a new stadium, right? Because there are so many hurdles there politically for Roma and Lazio to build a new privately funded stadium. They can't get the city to sign off on it. So maybe if Lotito becomes the mayor, he'll greenlight it.
Yeah, it's possible. I just think that the whole football world right now is going nuts. You got Lotito who wants to be mayor of Rome. All of a sudden, I see Chelsea today want Kai Havertz and willing to spend $75 million. And the city still can't determine what time they're going to be playing the games on Saturday and Friday for the Coppa Italia. It's a freaking free-for-all. I don't get it, man. Like, city has to get their shit together. Chelsea's got their shit together.
They're buying everybody.
Oh, and Lotito, I don't know. He's on cloud nine, man.
Well, let me introduce our special guest for this episode. I've been looking forward to this conversation all week. Lewis Smith is joining us. He's the South American football expert for World Football Index. So this is a part of the world we've not really given a whole lot of due. So I'm happy to broaden our horizons. Lewis, how you doing today, sir?
I'm great. Great to be a part of this podcast. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And I'm always curious. Now, you're based in the UK, so I'd love to know, like, where your passion for South American football came from. And is there any specific league over there that you follow more than the rest?
Well, my passion for South American football came probably around about 2011 when the Copa America was going on and Liverpool had just signed Suarez. Just watching him play every week was just amazing. It was his tricks, his skills, his just work rate was just amazing to watch. So that were in itself lit my eyes up to South American football. And I always like tend to keep my eye on the results during that period. And following that in 2017, I went to Brazil and I managed to catch a game over there. And that just grew my passion even more. It grew my passion loads for that, for the football over there, because I got a taste of seeing how locals attend matches there and the what goes in before the game and after the game. And it was a lot different to English football, but it was something that I really enjoyed to experience.
Hey, Luis, you said that you like Suarez. Did you like when he bit Chiellini in the ear?
Personally, I loved it.
Well, I think that's what got his transfer to Barcelona, really. So throughout his career, it was marred with his Liverpool career. At least it was just marred with several controversies. And when he left, it wasn't great because it took us a while to rebuild. But after that, now we're just flying.
Hey, Lewis, forgive my ignorance on this because I've been so consumed with following the various Euro leagues with when they're going to be returning from coronavirus. And obviously the Bundesliga has already been back for a couple of weeks. What's happening with the South American leagues? Is anyone back or are they going to be coming back soon?
I'm not too sure for most of South America, but I know Paraguay will be the first one to return in, I think, 17th of July, or maybe 27th or 17th, one of them two dates. That's when the Paraguayan league is returning, and that's the first league to come back, along with the Peruvian league, which is round about the same time. I was speaking to someone from Nacional's media team in Uruguay, and he was telling me that they were hoping the Copa Libertadores would restart in August. How that's going to work, I'm not sure. What method they're going to use, because they're still in the group stages, so I'm not too sure what's really happening with regards to that, but I'm sure in the coming days we'll find out, because it's going to be quite difficult, because the coronavirus in Brazil at the minute is really bad. I don't even think it's hit the peak. And the president's just an idiot, and he's not really helping anything. So it's just going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm going to start following that a little bit more closely. Now, we have something that Jerry and I have been talking about for weeks in terms of Serie A, which is coming back. You know, Coppa Italia in a few days, Serie A the following week. You know, they have this protocol for when they would suspend the league again. And until they find a way to tweak this or change it, I can't really give a whole lot of confidence that they're going to finish all the remaining fixtures, right? Because the way that the protocol stands right now is if one player on any team tests positive for coronavirus, and of course these guys will be tested regularly, so if they have one positive test, the entire team goes into quarantine for 2 weeks. So essentially the league is one positive test away from being fully suspended again. And, you know, if they have enough time, they'll go to a playoff to decide Scudetto and relegation and promotion. And if they don't have time for a playoff, because there's a certain cutoff date for that, July 10th is the reported cutoff date, that if the league is suspended after July 10th, they would have to use what they're calling an algorithm to decide promotion and relegation. Essentially, they're going to go to a mathematic formula to decide, you know, who goes to Champions League, who goes to Europa League, who gets relegated down to Serie B. And I really wish I'd paid more attention in math classes growing up, because I have in front of me the algorithm. Jerry, maybe you can help me with this, because I know that you're a whiz with all mathematics. It's PT plus MPCT XC plus MPF times FT. With a bunch of parentheses and brackets, and that's going to be how you decide promotion and relegation. So the whole thing sounds a little bit wacky. So what do you think about all this, Jerry, when it comes to mathematical algorithms or playoffs? I mean, if the league gets suspended again, it's going to be a gigantic mess.
Stupid. They're taking Antonio Conte's algorithm of how he won the Premier League and all his trophies in his time. That's what it is. That's what it really stands for. That's this stupid how they're going to decide the season, these thieves. But no, in all seriousness, I think it's dumb. I think if one person gets tested in 14 days, everybody has to quarantine. They're talking about having fans in the stadium by July. So I was just reading this today, and it's like, okay, so you want to quarantine the whole team, but you're talking about having fans already in this campaign. So where does this make sense? That's even worse if you're bringing everybody into a stadium, or even 30% of fans, say. It just contradicts itself. Like, they shouldn't even be discussing about having fans in July or October or whenever. And you got this other situation where it has been the biggest headache of quarantining quarantine the whole team if one person gets tested positive. To me, I would just throw the whole idea of quarantine one person, the whole team out the door. It makes no sense to me. I think I wouldn't know how to actually come out with an outcome. I don't know how they're even doing this. I guess they have people in their room that just have these ideas of what has to happen. It seems that a playoff is going to happen if the season is to not resume if someone gets tested positive. At this point, I think I said on an earlier show with you, Alex, is that I am not the biggest fan if eight teams get into the playoffs or six or four. But at the end of the day, if that's what it means to get a result and these idiots can't get their shit together because they are idiots, I'm sorry. And I don't know how it's been since March that the season hasn't been going on. And it's, what, 3-4 months and you still can't even figure out a time for freaking Coppa Italia on Friday and Saturday. And you want to figure out how the season's going to, a plan B for the Serie A if the season stops. These guys are all idiots. They don't know what the fuck they're doing, okay? Yes, that's right. They have no idea what they're doing. You got 18 votes to 3 about having a playout and a playoffs and whatever they want to do. And to me, at this point, I'm so over this because if you can't even get a time slot for a game that's within, what, 3 days?
Yeah.
Like, to me, it's a whole joke of a league. So I honestly think that when someone gets tested positive, hell's going to break out and they're going to change that rule. That's just my opinion. I think somehow, some way, they are going to tweak that rule.
Well, and on that note, my theory is they're going to tweak it, but they're going to wait until there's less public pressure. It seems as though the infection rate and the hospitalization and the deaths in Italy continue, thankfully, thank God, they continue to decrease and things are looking better. So maybe in a couple weeks from now, there's going to be a little bit less public emotion, you know, no, you have to quarantine everybody. So I think they might be waiting for some of the political pressure to die down. And every league seems to be handling this differently. I mean, the French league was completely canceled. The German league, if a player tests positive, you just quarantine that one player and no one else. And then in the Italian league, they're talking about quarantining entire teams. I mean, you know, Lewis, what's your take on all this? It's obviously all over the world. I mean, you talked about some of the difficulties in South America, where in Brazil, they've not even hit the peak yet. And then every European league and country is in kind of in a different spot. I mean, what's been your view on this saga over the last couple of months and how these leagues are trying to come out of it?
Yeah, it's been a crazy period for every country, and every country's had their own different methods of how to structure things. Like France, they've cancelled their league pretty much and awarded PSG the title, which has caused a problem in itself now with, I think, the clubs who have been relegated have now been reinstated into that league. In Holland, the same thing happened, but I'm not sure what's happened with relegation there. I think they've scrapped it. I'm not 100% sure on that. The Bundesliga returned straight away, well, straight away, faster than anyone else. But they did the testing, and with the testing, there was always going to be a few positive tests. Now, the problem with Italy saying that if someone's going to test positive, then they're going to halt the season for a while, then I don't think that's going to work, because someone may, and it's guaranteed out of thousand players that and coaching staff that someone's going to test positive. And they're going to have to try, as Jerry said, find a way to manage that when it does happen, rather than scrapping the league, because the complicated formula they've put out is not going to make any sense to anyone.
So a player we've talked about a lot throughout this hiatus of Serie A has been Sandro Tonali, who's definitely going to move on from Brescia. You know, Inter, Juventus have been among the suitors. You know, there are reports about offers from abroad, from Barcelona, but his preference is going to stay in Italy. There's really a lot of momentum behind the idea that Inter is not only in the lead because he's given his preference, has Tonali, to joining Inter, but they're working on closing the deal with Brescia. And according to Gianluca Di Marzio, As of today, we're recording this on Tuesday, there's talk of Inter working on closing the deal for 30 million euros plus bonuses. Now, 30 million euros sounds like an incredible bargain if they can get it done, you know, as this player has been talked about as having a 50 million euro valuation. So 30 million euros sounds like the steal of the century. I think that's a window into the realities of the COVID-19 economies, that you throw those valuations pre-COVID out the window, because a lot of teams will need to sell players for less money than they would like to, just for financial reasons, and Brescia is in that situation. But something else I've noticed that's happening with Tonali is that there's been a ton of criticism for, you know, wondering why Inter would go after him, you know, given the midfielders they already have, even though, you know, he may have to compete for a starting job, and also why Tonali would choose Inter when he could really go to Juventus and find more space in the squad. Now, I realize that leading the charge on these criticisms are, you know, the IFTV guys, namely Antonio, who's a very vocal Inter hater. He's a big Milanista, and some of his rants on the topic have gone viral on Calcio Twitter, but it's really gaining a lot of steam, and a lot of people are criticizing Tonali for allegedly choosing Inter's project over Juventus's project. And this is something that I want to address. I want to address it from Tonali's point of view, and I want to address it from Inter's point of view as to why I think this criticism is incredibly overboard. Now, from Tonali's point of view, two things here, okay? Number one, he's probably identified Conte's style and formation as one that can help him develop his game and thrive. Right, so I don't think it's as simple to say, well, he has more space on Juventus because they have fewer midfielders, so why not go to Juve? I mean, have you ever considered that maybe Tonali has decided, you know, Inter's style of play and Conte's philosophy might match, you know, what he thrives in more than Sarri's? I think that's something worth considering. And number two, I really don't hear a lot of people talk about this, and I wonder why it's not brought up more often. Don't you think Sandro Tonali probably likes the idea of teaming up at the club level with Barella and Sensi, especially Barella, who I think he's going to play with a lot, with the Azzurri, right, for many years to come? So wouldn't it make sense he would want to build more rapport with these guys at the club level? So that's Tonali's point of view. From Inter's point of view, first and foremost, for everyone out there, like, oh, why would Inter go after Tonali? Can you really blame a team for trying to go after the best players possible? And for a guy like Tonali, yeah, they have a lot of midfielders, but this guy specifically, 20 years old, and he's a generational talent. So can you blame him? For any squad that has the financial means to be able to afford him, can you blame any squad for going after a guy like this? And furthermore, I've been saying all season that their depth is overstated at midfield, because people throw out there, well, they have Brozovic and Barella and Sensi, and they brought in Eriksen in January. Why do they even need to go after another midfielder? I mean, first of all, Eriksen and Tonali are not similar at all. Eriksen is more of an attacking midfielder, where Tonali can play a little bit deeper, more of a regista type. So there's not really any overlap there between the two of those guys. And, you know, Inter has needed a vice Brozovic for a long time, because Brozovic plays a lot, probably too much, okay? In three competitions, right? Because there's going to be Champions League, there's obviously going to be Serie A, there's going to be Coppa Italia. Inter's going to have plenty of playing time to offer Tonali. So think about it this way. Matias Vecino, who I would say is probably Inter's fifth best midfielder, fifth on the current squad. And yet, he probably got the second most playing time this past year, because Sensi is always hurt. You know, Barella did have some time off for injury, had a knee injury. Brozovic has missed very little time. But with the other guys missing so much time, Matias Vecino has found a lot of space on the squad. He's probably going to leave this summer. So, you know, if Matias Vecino has found as much time as he's found, don't you think a guy like Tonali is going to find a lot more time on the pitch? So, I don't know. Jerry, I'm curious as to your thoughts on all this with Tonali.
Well, the IFTV guys I don't really follow anymore, because I'm not going to start a big stink. I just don't follow them. They really don't provide much to me. But in terms of Tonali, I think they're wrong. I always been saying that he should go to Juventus because he'll get more playing time. But aside from that, realistically, it's not a bad signing for $30 million, let's say. Inter can sell him in the long run and still make a value on him. They'll probably make a profit over, they'll sell him for more than $30 million in a few years down the road, because his value is surely going to be skyrocketing up. And they're taking advantage of the market. And if they're able to buy a player at half the cost or a quarter less, why not? That's one. Two, even if he doesn't play next season, he can get loaned out for a year and he'll get playing time somewhere else.
Well, and for the record, I absolutely think he will play next season because, again, I think that with Sensi being hurt all the time, I think there's plenty of opportunity for Tonali to play.
Oh, absolutely. But if people are thinking that he's not going to get playing time, I'm pretty sure that they will loan him out even for half a season if mm-hmm. they have to. Like, I don't see the issue of loaning him out and playing somewhere and gaining playing time. You know what I mean? A lot of teams do this with their bright superstars. The fact that this is a club that has seen so many injuries in the midfield. And you said a good point, and I said this so many times, that Brozovic, I think, has played 1,800 minutes this season. That's insane. I'm sorry, man. You need other midfielders to replace players. You cannot depend on Brozovic to play in Serie A, to play in Europa League, to play in Coppa Italia. Their bodies can only sustain so much. And there's always going to be games where you will see Tonali be inserted. And the whole midfield has been hurt. I can Sensi, like you said, was hurt. Barella was hurt this year. I don't know who wasn't hurt in that midfield, to be honest.
I think even Brozovic had at some point had a knock. I mean, he didn't miss much time, but I think
he missed the whole time.
Yeah,
I think he missed one or two games as well. And correct me if I'm wrong, the position that covers that plays the most and runs the most and has to like cover the most space is a midfielder.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that you have bodies that are able to cover from game in and game out. This is not like strikers don't run as much and defenders don't run as much as a midfielder. Midfielders have to cover, especially players like Brozovic, Christian Eriksen, and Tonali and Barella. They join the attack. They come in to help the defense. They're all over. I would love to see how many kilometers they run per game, what the distance is that they cover per game. And people don't think that their bodies need time to recover as well. So to have extra bodies, and especially the way Conte plays, he demands the most out of his players in training and in games. And people who know Conte inside and out will agree that the more bodies, the more merrier with this guy. Like, I know that he has more excuses than a book can hold. But at the end of the day, you have to put that out the door for a second and say, you have to acknowledge the fact that a manager such as Conte needs more bodies because he demands a lot. And he's a very offensive kind of manager and very tack-minded, but also very strategic. And I could be wrong on this, but I just think that if you have Tonali in the lineup, it doesn't hurt them. It only benefits them more. They're more deeper. They need depth. And you know what? You can look at I'll take an example. Timo Werner with Chelsea. And a lot of people think, well, isn't Callum Hudson-Odoi? Isn't Pulisic? Isn't Tammy Abraham going to get hurt? But no, he's versatile in every position. He can cover every position, and he allows players, he can provide depth if there's an injury. And if there isn't an injury, he can rotate these players to give them rest. He can change up the formations. So with Tonali, it gives Conte another different aspect to his game, he gives him more versatility, he covers positions, it allows Inter to be more creative against more competitive opponents such as Juventus, say. He can change it up maybe against a Lazio or wherever it may be. So I think Tonali can really be beneficial if they sign him.
I'm curious to see what happens. I mean, I know that at this time, Tonali is definitely the player that Inter is working on the hardest to try and close a deal. Maybe they're close to it for $30 million plus bonuses. They're also working hard on Marash Kumbula, who is still being pursued by Lazio and by Juventus. So I'd love to see, you know, what sort of talk comes out of those two players over the next couple of weeks. But I want to take a deep dive into some Brazilian football, and namely Gabriel Barbosa, a.k.a. Gabigol. Now, when we were talking with Lewis, who joins us about coming on, this was one of the players that popped into my head that I would love to get his take on, because, you know, obviously he had his issues at Inter, and then he had his issues at Benfica, but he's really been tearing it up again with Flamengo. He's been looking really good. You know, this was a guy that in 2016, Inter took a flyer on him. He was very young. They bought him for, you know, around 30 million euros. And I'd love kind of your perspective, Lewis, what the chatter is, you know, maybe from the South American standpoint on why things didn't work out for Gabigol in Europe, namely at Inter, because I always kind of wonder that maybe if the move had happened a year or two later, he could have been more mature, and also Inter could have been more stable, because they were not stable whatsoever at the time that they bought Gabigol and brought him over. But it also seemed like he had his issues adjusting to European life. And, you know, maybe he had issues adjusting his style, you know, towards Serie A. He just might be a player that's not built towards Serie A. What's your take on all that?
Well, yeah, that coming into a new country, age 20, is hard for anyone, no matter what you're doing, what profession you're doing. So if you're taking a 20-year-old out of his comfort zone, bringing him into a new style of life, a new culture, a new language, you kind of need someone to put their arm around him and manage him through. Did that happen at Inter? I'm not too sure, because during the football season, he didn't really get much of a chance to play. I think he made nine appearances in total during his time at Inter, but half of them was as a sub. In fact, the majority, I think, did he play a full 90 minutes?
Maybe just a couple times.
Yeah.
Maybe once or twice.
I think in a couple of friendlies, or he played a full 90 minutes, which wouldn't have done any good for his confidence. But I think part of that as well could be to the fact that he joined late in the summer, which means he didn't get a chance to have a pre-season at Inter. And who knows, a pre-season might have done him a world of good. But yeah, he's not getting starts early on. Certainly won't have helped him. I noticed that now you have Lautaro Martinez, who has been amazing. And one key factor, when he first came, he was getting starts. I think he started as soon as he joined in, he played in the first team straight away, which would have just done him a world of good, knowing that your manager and your team has the faith in you to perform. Maybe if Gabigol would have had that, he could have been something similar, especially as a 20-year-old. Something that you need is confidence more than anything. And if you're struggling to adapt off the field, then it's going to affect you on the field as well.
Well, he was one of the most talked about players last season, and Flamengo did buy him from Inter this past summer. So how would you describe his game, and what makes him different from other players?
Well, last season, Flamengo enjoyed one of the greatest seasons in the history. And one of the key factors was down to Gabigol. In his game, he's versatile. He can play up front as a lone striker, or he can play out wide. But no matter where he plays, he always provided a threat to the opposition. First of all, his finishing. If anyone gave him a sniff of the chance, he was likely to score. Being able to remain calm under pressure to allow him to pick where he wants to place his shot, basically. It's not just inside the box where he were deadly. Outside the box too, with the power he gets behind his shots, I mean, sometimes a keeper's not going to stand a single chance. With the fear he causes with that shooting ability, defences would defenses would press him high and always leave a man on him, which allows him to use his strength to hold up the ball, which allows him to pick off a pass and create chances for the gaps that are left behind in the players marking him. As well as that, when he does have the ball, his ability to run with the ball at speed and cut inside, it's just a nightmare for defenders to mark him and just keep control of him. One important part of being a goal scorer is being in the right place at the right time. I remember people talking when Sterling first came to Man City and he never scored. Well, Pep Guardiola showed him how to get into the box and sniff out opportunities. That's exactly what Gabigol did last season. And since he's been in Brazil, he's always been, if a keeper parries a shot, he will always find a way to be there, reacting quicker than anyone else on the pitch to create a simple chance for himself. And if you can't be there, you can't score. He's a big game player, as he proved last year. In the semi-final of the Copa Libertadores, second leg, he was absolutely unplayable. Grêmio didn't have a clue how to answer for him, and he scored a brace. And then in the final, he showed that even when he's not performing to the best of his ability, that he can flick the game in an instant.
Now, this guy made his professional debut at the age of 16 with Santos. At 16, I was still in high school. I'm pretty jealous, but he made it. And basically, what has contributed to his success in beginning his playing at such a young age?
Well, Gabigol, you don't get a nickname like that if you're not a goal scorer. And well, throughout, he got that nickname during the youth team, during his youth days. So obviously, he's been scoring for fun. And if you can score for fun, the manager's going to trust you no matter what. As he's shown, even as I explained, if he's not having the best of games, he'll always find a way to steal the headlines, like he did in that Copa Libertadores final. I mean, River were outplayed Flamengo for 75 minutes, and he just snatched the game away from him in the blink of an eye, really. But at Santos early on, he was managed by Claudine Oliveira, who was his youth coach. And 4 days before he eventually got the full-time job as the first team, Gabigol made his debut. And when Oliveira did take over, he ended up giving Gabigol a further three appearances. As a 16-year-old, to play 4 games is in any leagues, just you must be doing something right. And yeah. I think with him being a youth coach to him, Oliveira wouldn't have wanted to put too much pressure on him, put him in every year, played him more basically when he wasn't quite ready. So they brought him in slowly to try help him develop. And one other thing, in Brazil they have state championships. Now, many people see this as a negative because there's too many games over a short space of time and the meaningless games. I mean, it's like, how can I put it? If I put it in terms of Serie A, it's like a top flight Serie A team playing against a 7th division side for no real reason. this happens far too often. But one positive, I guess, is for the youth players. They can be brought in and blooded into the first team, and mix well with any new players, and it just helps them develop. Because I think Gabigol at Santos, they're in the Sao Paulo State Championship, which is one of the hardest. Because it's Santos, Palmeiras, along Santos, Palmeiras, Bragantino are now top division side, and it's a more competitive ones out of all the state championships. So the state championships really helped Gabigol because he certainly benefited from the second season is when he first played in the. He played in the league 4 games for 4 games in 20, 2013, I think. And then the 2014 season, he became a full first team regular at just 17 years old. And I think the state championships had a key say in that, because during those state championships, in six games, he scored six goals. And that's just going to give him confidence going into the season. And I think that's what he is the type of player what he needs. He needs confidence. He feeds off confidence. And if he's confident, the team's confident in him, then he'll score goals.
Well said. And I like what you said, how you don't get a nickname like Gabigol for no reason. And, you know, in his first season with Flamengo, scored a career-high 25 goals in the Brazilian Championship A Series. So, I mean, and you've talked about this a little bit, some of his strengths, but, you know, how has his coach been able to get the most out of him? And, you know, I wonder now, since, you know, his future was decided in January when they officially bought him from Inter. So now I guess he doesn't have to be concerned about, you know, am I going to get loaned out somewhere else, or am I going to go to another league? So maybe he can now focus more on the Brazilian championship. So what are your expectations for Gabigol coming up, when this season resumes and even heading into next season?
When this season ended, Gabigol was on fire. He'd scored 13 times in 10 matches already, which in all competitions, I mean, the season hadn't started yet, but a lot of those games weren't in those state championships. I guess he was in the Super Cup competitions. I guess they're more competitive than the state championships. And I think in a game against Atlético Paranaense, he and Flamengo were just unbelievable. I think he finished 3-0 to Flamengo. I can't fully remember, but they absolutely battered Paranaense. They didn't give him a single chance, and watching it just makes you think, well, how can anyone compete with him in Brazil? I mean, they've got the most money to do Flamengo, and yeah, it's going to be hard to compete with him. In terms of the coach, well, Jorge Jesus took over in June last year, and ever since he took over Flamengo, they've just gone in an upward spiral. He brought in a high-pressing brand of football, which has reaped plenty of benefits for Gabigol and Flamengo, pushing the defensive line up, looking to squeeze the opposition when Flamengo don't have the ball. They're instantly looking to win it back, which to keep hold of the ball is something that they want to do. But when they do have the ball, they attack in high numbers with seven or eight players, meaning when they attack, they're always going to create chances, which is going to simply benefit, you know, when you've got a striker like Gabigol who's going to be sniffing in and around to try to pounce on any chance that comes his way. The more chances created by Flamengo simply means Gabigol is going to score more goals.
Go ahead.
this didn't just benefit Gabriel Barbosa. It benefited the other players, the other attacking players like Bruno Henrique, Everton Ribeiro, and Jorgian Dias Arrasqueta. I think between the four of them, they had 60 plus goals. Could have been 70 plus.
Wow.
Which is just crazy for four players, and that. Yeah, it's. It was impressive, to say the least.
Jeez, that is tremendous. Would you say, because obviously he's performed well for Flamengo more recently and then Santos prior to that in the two stints he's had there. Between Santos and Flamengo, which club do you think he's had more success with?
I'd say 100% Flamengo. Yeah, Santos, that was his start. They made his name, but at Santos, he won the state championship twice. Yeah, in one of the toughest states in Brazil to win it. But, I mean, if you look what he won at Flamengo last season, he won the state championship, the Copa Libertadores and the Brasileirão. It's just too hard to compete. And it's the the performances he put in those tournaments earned him individual awards such as the South American Player of the Year, which which eclipses what he achieved at Santos already. But there's no reason to say that Santos' time was unsuccessful, because he did have success and he did learn his trade there. And already Flamengo this season have lifted the two curtain raiser trophies in the Recopa Sudamericana and the Brazilian Super Cup. And I'm sure Gabigol will be eager to add to that when football in Brazil does resume, whenever that may be.
And lastly, his contract will be set to expire in December 2024. Can we envision Gabigol returning to Europe, or do you see him continuing his career in South America?
At the moment, I can't see him leaving Flamengo. I mean, he's a star of South American football. Why would he want to leave? I mean, if you're the poster boy for the whole continent, then I can see it's going to be hard for him to leave, but at least anytime soon. I mean, he's earned his way back into the Brazil squad. And more importantly, why would he want to risk going to Europe again and jeopardising his career, or potentially jeopardising his career? I mean, if he does enjoy a couple of more successful seasons at Flamengo, then maybe if he wants to, he could challenge himself again in Europe. He'll be more confident and more mature, which will give him more time to learn things off the field as well as on the field, which could help, because he can be a bit of a hothead at times. So maybe he needs a couple more years in South America to help him mature more, because he still has the shades of rashness in him, and he'll pick up a card here and then. I mean, in the Club World Cup semi-final, he could have quite easily got sent off during one of the games, squaring up to one of the I can't remember who they played. It was some Qatarian team or Saudi Arabian team Flamengo played on. Yeah, he was more focused on getting drawn into battles with them players rather than focus on his game. And if he can take that out of his game, then maybe he'll be able to star in Europe. Who knows?
All of that really, really well said on Gabigol, who's a really intriguing character to Serie A fans, no doubt about that. And kind of sticking with Flamengo, I wanted to ask you about now this player has Serie A experience, but I haven't watched him since he's been at Flamengo, and now there's talks that he could wind up at Chelsea. Have you been following those rumors on Gerson, and how has he looked back in Brazil?
Yeah, Gerson, I've seen today that he's been linked with Chelsea, and I saw the Fox Sport Brazil have been reporting a few stuff on Gerson this week. Friday, they said that Tottenham had made a bid for him. Now, how true that is, I'm not sure. Then Sunday, it was Chelsea and Dortmund who were rumored to be interested in signing him. Now, I think Flamengo want around 35 million or 31 million pounds, around that fee. Now, in terms of football, that's not too expensive, but how often do you see an English team pay 31 million for a South American? It just doesn't happen often. Now, if they do, whoever does get him, what can he bring? Well, he's a box to box midfielder, and he helps Flamengo play the way they play. I mean, the midfielder key to that team with Willian Arão, when Flamengo attack, Willian Arão drops back with the defenders, allowing the midfielders to rush forward. And Gerson, he wins the ball back. He does have the occasional goal in him, but it's very rare you'll see him score. But he will always be involved in a goal in some way or another, hunting down defenders, chasing them. He can play out wide. He's played out wide a few times, but he's more a central player. But with Willian Arão dropping back, it allows Gerson to run around and hunt the ball back and help adopt Jesus's pressing game, which worked well. So especially with the European style system that Jesus brought in, it will definitely help Gerson settle into English football quicker than someone like Gabigol.
Well, really good stuff, man. Great, tremendous insight. Let the people know where they can find you on social media. Of course, they can check out your work on World Football Index, but you'll probably going straight to the source on Twitter is a great way to see your stories when you post them.
Yeah, my Twitter is at LewisSmith22.
Really good stuff, man. So that was a lot of fun. So Jerry, before we close it out, is there anything else on your mind? I mean, we talked about Lotito potentially running for mayor of Rome. I have seen that that Napoli is, you know, going to most likely offer a contract extension to Rino Gattuso, and I actually think it's well deserved. I think he's done a nice job there since taking over, and I think it's probably a good thing for both sides to keep that relationship going. You know, Jerry, maybe before we wrap it up, we will talk a little bit later this week about Coppa Italia, but when it comes to Juve, Milan, Napoli, Inter, do you have any predictions for those games?
Oh, man. I'm going to go with Juve, but it wouldn't surprise me if Milan won. Because both teams
it wouldn't surprise me either. And it's surprised. Really because I could see Milan really prioritizing Coppa Italia and maybe Juventus. And I know they'd love to win a treble, obviously, but I don't know if they're going to have the same priority for Coppa as Milan will.
No, that's a good point. You just don't know what kind of form these teams are going to look into, what they're going to look like, what to expect. I'll go with Juventus because they're Juventus, and I'm going to go with Napoli because Napoli, they really are prioritizing Coppa Italia, and before the season had took a pause, I really believed that Napoli was going to win the Coppa Italia, and they reminded me of Lazio last year when their season was on a downhill, and they needed something to salvage it and just give them something to believe in, which they did in winning it. And I think that with Napoli winning the Coppa Italia will give fans especially a little sense of happiness, and after such a poor season, just an up and down season and a lot of poor decisions, I'd say, but with Gattuso coming in and should be as the full-time manager, I think that's a great decision. That Carlo Ancelotti, I like his tactics. I think that tactically he's very smart. He knows how to play against his opponents. He's done it for a long time. He's coached a lot of really good teams. And I think the difference with Gattuso is that this is a man who doesn't take bullshit. And he is going to light a fire under all these pieces of shit. Especially, you've seen Alan. Alan got the boot and said, hey, you're sitting down for a game, buddy. You learn. When you come to practice, you come and you try. You don't try, you're not part of this team. And that is a type of manager that maybe this club really needs at the moment. And since he's been there, the attitude of the players have really changed. And they are really fond of him. And then I heard on Red Card Report Card, Joseph Fischetti said a really good point that the players, they really rallied behind Gattuso when his sister passed away this past week.
That's right.
And my condolences to her and his family and everything. But the respect that they showed, just like Lazio showed for Inzaghi, he mentioned, was a good comparison. And maybe that's something that a foundation that they're starting to build where it's like a family and they're going to fight for each other. And that's what you really want out of your teams is players and management gaining the respect out of each other and caring for each other. So with Gattuso coming in, I think that's the right guy. And that's looking at this now, this is the biggest mistake that Milan did going into their season, not bringing back Gattuso. And the players lost all respect for the club. They didn't care about Giampaolo. Marco Giampaolo just never had the respect of his players from day one, like Gattuso had last year. And that's the difference, I think, at the end of the day. And when you're not playing for your manager, it's very hard to really give your full effort, your full confidence. We saw it with Ancelotti And I always bring up Inzaghi, and I know that he doesn't have like the most prolific profile, like the prolific squad, big money spending, all these players like other clubs do in the league. But at the end of the day, when you get when you earn the respect of your players, it doesn't matter if they're a B minus, A minus, or A. They will give you 100%, and that's what Lazio has done this year, is give 100%, 90 minutes, keep on playing till the game's ended. And when you think they're out, they're not out. And that's what you're seeing with Napoli at the moment, where they're showing such great form, and we're the only team to beat Lazio in the last 22 games, I believe.
That's right.
In the Coppa Italia. And how did they beat them? They beat them by outworking them. I'll try, and that was a good game, and fully deserved by Napoli, because they scored in the first 5 minutes and they just tried harder, and not tried harder, but they came as a complete team. And that's what Gattuso and Inzaghi, this is like a type of new management role that we're seeing in leagues now. Even with Chelsea, Frank Lampard, he's got these young guys who are really playing for him. And now the results are probably not as similar, but he still has his team who advanced out of the group stage in the Champions League, most likely going to be out against Bayern Munich. You got them, I believe, in the final eight of FA Cup. He's got them battling in a top four spot for Champions League next year in the EPL. These are good results, and these are young managers who are developing this player-manager relationship that a lot of managers haven't done in the past. And I want to say Allegri as well was that type of manager with Juventus, where he built that foundation, that chemistry with his players, that relationship where he was able to get the most out of them because they respected him and he respected his players. So I think that's why Gattuso is going to do a really good job with Napoli, and Napoli fans are going to be very happy with this signing.
So good stuff, and we'll wrap it up on that note. A huge thanks again to Lewis for joining us. Jerry and I will be back, I think, a couple more times this week in the build-up for Coppa Italia. I think we're even going to do a recap episode over the weekend for the games on Friday and Saturday. So thanks to everyone. We'll talk to you on the next episode of the Calcio Connection podcast. Ciao.